Plaquemine was one of the few areas where there actually had been blacks voting. And we had come into that area to register voters, and people were just so enormously grateful. They never in a million years thought that the civil rights movement would reach them. They may have been living in primitive conditions, but they all had televisions, so they saw all the things on TV.
I pity the segregationist. I think that he is as much a victim of the historical forces about which we've been talking as the Negro has. Now, we are trying to free him as we gain freedom for ourselves.
James Farmer was an incredible orator. What he said was absolutely what we all agreed with.
We're not going to stop until the bigots of the South and the North no longer challenge a man's right to live simply because he is asking for the rights which the Constitution says are his.
Core felt it would be a very good motivational thing to have James Farmer come down to help galvanize the local community. There had been a series of protest marches broken up by the local law enforcement people, and the situation had, by late August of that summer, escalated to the point where town officials had gotten the cooperation of a local federal judge. E. Gordon West had actually issued a number of restraining orders against the marchers. So one night we had a big rally. There was a lot of singing, and James Farmer gave a very strong motivational speech. Then we took off marching downtown and were met by a massive wall of resistance from the white community. And a lot of the law enforcement people were on horseback. They had cattle prods. They had high-pressure hoses with them. And they drove the marchers back into the black community. And we all took refuge in the church, figuring that we would be safe there. And they broke through the windows of the church. They lobbed tear gas grenades into the church, turned high-pressure hoses on in through the windows, thereby forcing everybody to flee. And at first, Mr. Farmer thought that he would, in fact, turn himself in, that that might quiet things down. And he was advised by the local black leaders that he would be, in fact, giving his life away. And at that point, one of the leaders in the black community had a funeral parlor. And he hid him in the back of a hearse, so they were able to get Farmer out of town. Meanwhile, the sheriff's deputies and all the law enforcement people and all the vigilantes were busily trying to round up the rest of us. I don't know how many hundreds of us they arrested, but they needed four different kinds of jail cells for the whites and the blacks, because of course we were to be segregated in the jail, and they needed cells for the men and the women. And none of the communities around there were all that large. I happened to be shipped off to the Port Allen jail. Port Allen is a suburb of New Orleans and is probably at this moment underwater. I was actually the only white woman who was arrested, who at least ended up at Port Allen. And so I was in a cell all by myself. It was maybe 8 feet by 8 feet, with a steel bunk bed with a thin mattress on it. And there were toilet facilities in the cell. And the only paper available was the toilet paper. So I wrote a long letter description of what had happened on toilet paper.
Dear Danny, this is the finest of prison stationery, nothing but the best for you.
Danny Mitchell was another core person. He was black, and we had just become very good friends. And I don't remember now why I addressed the letter to Danny, except that he probably had told me just before he left, please keep me posted on what happens.
Bands of vigilantes roamed the neighborhood, breaking into homes, overturning furniture, and dragging out everyone with a black face.
I wanted to get the facts down. I mean, it was just so horrendous.
If they had a prodder, they used them to hurry the process. They pulled down one girl's pants and prodded her between her legs. They prodded an 8-month pregnant lady until she dropped from pain.
This was information that we would need for a variety of reasons, not least because we had hoped that federal authorities would move in and investigate. But the only way I was going to get the toilet paper letter out was to somehow hide it, and I knew that the possibility existed that I would be thoroughly body searched and patted down on the way out. I mean, I don't know that they would have tried to read it, but if they had read it and understood what it was about, they would have flushed it down the toilet immediately. As luck would have it, I had been wearing a dress that had a very full skirt and a fairly deep hem, and with many apologies to my mother, I ripped the stitches and slipped the toilet paper letter into the hem, and it was never found. I don't even think I ever sent it to Danny. I was very happy that the State Historical Society got it, and they have preserved it very carefully. And that is a piece of history that we all should be extremely proud, not just those of us who are co-workers. We were maybe catalysts. I mean, the true heroes of the story were the people who lived there. I mean, they didn't vote. They had absolutely no involvement in public affairs. And the voter registration movement and the civil rights movement, they brought themselves into the 20th century and became a part of America. And some of them lost their farms, some of them lost jobs, some of them were beaten up, arrested. And it's one of the, maybe the few times in recent memory where it so clearly showed that when people got together and protested an injustice, that the injustice could be undone.
Burning with the man.